So while I'm setting this up, our next speaker needs actually no introduction. But I will do the formality. And this is Alan, in case you didn't. You heard his name always, I'm sure, but you didn't meet him. So Alan Roginski, he's from NIST, and he works as a mathematician at NIST, and his present research interest is cryptography and its applications. Prior to switching to cryptography, he spent a number of years with IBM Corporation analyzing and improving computer network's performance. Alan is a Dr. Alan in statistics from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and he has more than 30 publications and over a dozen U.S. patents. Welcome, Alan.
Thank you. Thank you, Nitya, for your kind
introduction. You have a few minutes, but just a little bit of logistics. So you have up till 15. Okay, there's a clock. So you can go up till 10. 10, yeah, 5 minutes.
So. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nitya, and thank you everybody who came to this presentation. So here's the topic. It's somewhat limited, but I think an important topic, how to improve the performance of the PowerUp self-tests within the FIPS 140-2 and eventually FIPS 140-3 framework. So here's the overview of the talk. There is a self-test requirement in FIPS 140-2, and I will certainly mostly talk about FIPS 140-2 because that's the standard right now. So first we will talk about the requirements. Then the effect of the self-test requirements on the module startup time. You know, there is a benefit of this test, but there is a substantial cost. And then we'll talk about how various industries meet similar requirements, not similar, but at least somewhat of a self-test requirement. And then we will talk about specifically the integrity test requirement, how to improve its performance. And then the details of it, and then what the next step might be. So with this, So the requirements. There are power-up tests and there are conditional tests. This is not a full list, at least not a full list of the conditional tests, but the power-up tests is the integrity test. That's number one test. You want to be sure that after the module was tested by a laboratory, by a testing lab, it hasn't changed, or at least its firmware, software image has not changed. And how you test it, you basically compare the image, the binary image of the firmware that existed at the time of the initial testing to what it is now, at the time the module is powered up. And that's an very important test, and that's the one we will try to address here. Then for every approved algorithm, there is either a known answer test or, if it's impossible, a substitution test. Sometimes you cannot run a known answer test. And there are some critical function tests. On top of it, there are many conditional tests. Generating key pairs, you compare them together to make sure the two keys work together. Then there is a loading software firmware tests. Then when you manually load keys, a bypass test, and I put a semicolon, it's a very different type of test, so it's different. Then there is also a random number generator self-test. But these are conditional. They only take place when a certain condition occurs. That's, for example, when you load software. Okay, that may or may not happen very often. But the power-up tests have to be performed every time you power up the module. And for many years, that was okay because the drag on the module performance was acceptable from the industry standpoint, and at least NIST and CSE, the CMBP group, didn't hear too many complaints until a few years ago. So the last statement here is that the integrity test requirements are different for modules operating in the modifiable and non-modifiable environments. Another way to say it is to say hardware and software.
Sorry.
Oh, sorry, do I need to
close it
to Microsoft? Okay, sorry, I thought, I apologize. No, no, thank you. So, in the non-modifiable environment, typically when it's a firmware running in the module, the test is running faster. You don't need an approved algorithm to run the test. So you can run a simpler test using, for example, CRC16, the cyclic redundancy code. And that will work better or faster, not better. Not as good, but faster. But even this takes time. So with this, let's see what happened between 2001, when the standard was adopted, and the recent times. First, the need for the tests. We believe, and that's what we hear from the industry, the need has diminished because there is less chance that something would go wrong. Of course, something can go wrong, but less of a chance. The implementations are more robust, they're better protected, and these self-tests, they're not protecting against attacks. They're protecting against some inadvertent errors, some bit is flopped due to some radiation coming from the sun, some unexpected and unconditional events. And these are less likely to happen, or something happened during the transportation of the module. Less likely. Okay. Then the second and even more important problem is that the size of the software firmware image that you need to test has grown, and has grown substantially. Now we are talking about the gigabytes of image data. And we have many requests that where the complaint said that it takes several seconds to execution time. Here at this conference, I talked to one testing laboratory. They have a vendor who's talked about the minutes of execution time when performing just the integrity test. So here is an example. Suppose you have a smart card that is used to authenticate a person's entry into a building. So the smart card is usually off, or that device is usually off. But when you enter the building, it has to be activated and then perform this particular function. And then the person behind you has to do it with his or her card and so on. So it takes 5-10 seconds, and everybody stops. And then the person behind you stops, and then they wait another 5-10 seconds, at best, maybe longer. Because those cards don't have high-speed processors. They, however, may have a pretty long code. And that will cause a tremendous jam entering the building only because the standard requires this particular test, which is becoming less and less necessary due to what the industry trends are. So how to address it? We don't want to just drop the test altogether. What do other industries do when they have to test a large number of items? And here the number of items, the items are the bits in the image of software or firmware. So what do they do? The manufacturing, the pharmaceutical industry, the agriculture, which need to test some new fertilizer, for example. Well, they perform statistical testing. That's the way the world goes. And when they perform the statistical testing, they claim that everything was tested. If you buy some electrical device and it says that it's been tested by UL, like almost all of them do, it doesn't mean that the device that you bought was tested by UL. It wasn't. But a number of them, statistical sampling, was tested by UL, and only after successfully passing these tests, they allowed to sell, or they put their stamp of approval on all of the devices, and they said they tested all, meaning that any one is as good as the other. Of course, every situation is different, and some bits maybe are not the same as the others, but each bit is in the stream of bits is probably more or less equally likely to be compromised. That's one situation. Then the crop yields, for example, again, if they test a new fertilizer, they don't test it in every field in the world. They test it in some places, and then they say, under these conditions, the fertilizer works, and they sell it with this claim. They don't test it in every continent and every place where they grow anything. So why can't we adopt the same mentality, if nothing else, and see if we can address the present problem or by doing the same thing? So let's just quickly go over the assumptions that it's a health test only. We're not trying to diagnose any issues. We're not trying to check the design of the module. It's all been done already when the module was tested by a testing lab. So the other means are used to test this. And then another assumption is that you can represent the binary string that you test as a string of bits that you can enumerate 1 to n. That's a natural thing, but has to be spelled out. So the statistical approach. In the draft implementation guidance that I wrote, there are all the details of how it's done, but here it's just the logic that we will talk about. It's quite simple, I think. You break the string into n substrings, and there are some parameters. N is no greater than 1024, at least with our proposal. And the length is k bits, and then k bits, and then k bits, and the last one might be less than k, might be k, if it breaks exactly into the k-bit strings. And the k, for at least as part of our proposal, is at least 2 million bits. You don't want to test some small strings. It's somewhat arbitrarily chosen based on some considerations, but right now it's a parameter which is at least 2 million bits. Because if everything is small, if you have just small samples and not too many of them, then you don't even need this technique. You can test it all. And then what you do, you apply whatever integrity testing technique is appropriate, whether it's software, hardware module, the modifiable or non-modifiable environment, to each of those substrings ahead of time, when you're not constrained by any time issues. You apply, you store them in the module. And then you want to test some of them. If some of those strings, at each time you power up the module, then against what you stored. And here is the question. Which ones? And how do we select those that you test? It's a good question because you don't have any algorithms yet that you've tested and tried. You don't trust your algorithms yet until you tested your integrity. At least ideally you don't. You can make an exception, you can design any standard you want, but it would be undesirable, I think, to trust an algorithm at this time. So, moreover, running a random number generator to select, let's say, out of 1,024, maybe 20 different subsamples, it's too expensive to run a cryptographic random number generator, which requires lots of entropy to initialize. It will defeat the purpose of this whole proposal. So all the module needs is a separate random number generator, which doesn't have to be cryptographically strong. There is no attack that has to be considered against this generator. There are no cryptographic issues. You just need to select the numbers between 1 and n, and if n is no greater than 1024, it's 10 bits of entropy that this random number generator needs. So if the module records the time and does some processing of the time, just takes a trigonometric function of this time value and records some values, that's good enough. Anything is good enough that possesses 10 bits of entropy and doesn't require the cryptographic strength. So it's very simple. It's a very small overhead. And let's assume it can be done. So then you take those M selected substrings that the random generator pointed to. It points to M, let's say 10 or 20 different numbers, and computes the image the integrity test an image of each of them. And then you see if they're part of those images that were pre-stored based on what we did in the previous page, or they're not. If they are, fine, you passed the statistical test. Like with anything else, with the medicine that you take, you tested it on so many patients, and if all of them improved, you don't wait to test it on the population of the world. You believe that with the proper statistical analysis that it's a good medication. Same here. But there is a further optimization that I think can be strongly recommended. It's a Bloom filter, and I wish I had more time to talk about it, but certainly not much time left. The Bloom filter was invented by a person named Bloom, who was a librarian. And the problem was how to quickly decide if the book is in the library or in the catalog. If there are billions of books, especially in the 1970s where it was invented. So it's a great filter, a very fast working filter that allows to quickly find if something is a member, if a particular element is a member of a set. And I would like to talk about it, but I think it's a topic for another day, as much as I really would like to talk about it. It's a great optimization for this purpose, because all we need to do, we don't have to worry if this substring image maps into the right place. Just is it there or is it not? And if all of them are there, the Bloom filter is designed for this. I put it as an optional optimization in the draft IG. And I think it should be. You don't have to do it this way, but it is an optimization and can speed up things even further. And then there is a deterministic approach. Let's say a vendor doesn't want to implement this random number generator, even a simple one. Then the deterministic approach, which I do not advocate, but it's there too, is to move basically from the beginning to the end, but don't test all of them at the beginning. Let's say you have, again, 24 substrings, and the first time you test 32 of them, then the next 32, next time the module wakes up the next 32, then the next 32, and the next. Great, but not as good, because with the first one, you really test all of them. You never know which one will come up, so in a sense, you test all. But this is okay, but the problems are that you have to keep track of where you stopped, and the module basically shuts down, and you have to keep track of where you stopped after the first check. And then what happened, let's say you keep this track, and this location is F, which gets increased by D, by D, and by D. And then what if F is corrupted? Something happens and F is always set to zero because of the problem with the module that you don't know. That's what you're testing. And then that's a problem. Not the problem with the statistical test, but the problem here. So the proposal basically keeps two parallel tracks of where you stopped. And both of them have to get corrupted. That's highly unlikely with the modules, the two independent values get corrupted. So that's how it's addressed. But normally it would proceed, it proceeds, it proceeds until the whole code is executed. Then there is an issue in the top bullet, why D divides N? Because if it doesn't, then you go all the way around, and then you start not at bit 1, but at bit maybe 5 or whatever, and then you test different strings. So in a sense, if you have to store too many strings images, not just some of them, like every D's, but all of them, which is fine if somebody wants to do it. But if you can make a D that divides N, then you only will be testing some of them, and that may help. But that is a burden, because what if N, the length of the image, happens to be a prime number? You don't want to redesign the module just to optimize this. So first of all, I don't necessarily advocate the deterministic approach. Second, you have an option, either to find the D that divides N, then you store fewer images, or you don't have this, then you store more images, then you don't worry about d dividing n. Just take whatever numbers you have. And then the Bloom filter will not work here because it works with a statistical and unpredictable position of this, but this will not work because, again, if f gets stuck and then you get that the first image is always there, then what good is it? So, and for a number of reasons, well, that's the main reason why Bloom filter is not good. But it is an approach. It is a valid approach. It will work. It will work. It just, again, a way to test fewer, to make a statement of the more, of the greater number of samples. And it wouldn't be, we wouldn't be presenting it if it wasn't a pressing industry trend. And then I need to make an announcement, I think very much related to it, and that the CMUF, the Cryptographic Module User Forum, is forming a working group to review and comment on this draft IG. And I'm very happy to hear, and even more happy to know that Nithya is, I guess, in charge of this, right, effort. Well, that's wonderful that you are, Nithya. Thank you very much. So that is the announcement, but that's not the end of the talk. The summary. But it's almost there. Two more slides. The summary. Problem is addressed. If somebody has a better proposal, wonderful. But that's the proposal I have. And it will cut. Look, if the problem is that it takes 10 seconds to perform integrity test, well, with our, the best case scenario, it will only take 1/10 of a second. If it takes 3 minutes, which is what, 180 seconds, will only take 1.8 seconds, if the numbers are the best they can be. Sometimes you can get 99% improvement with the statistically meaningful numbers. Sometimes less of an improvement, but a significant improvement. And in some cases, it's between the death and life and death for the module, because it may become impractical without this improvement. And one important thing to put it into perspective is that the vendors ask for this, but they also ask about reconsidering the need for all of the self-tests in general. Because, look, here are the problems. First, it's not clear why test the algorithms. So why self-test the algorithms? Why? Why not just test the multiplication tables? If the module is corrupted, it's as likely to give you a problem when you multiply 5 by 7, then you run an AES. Really, it's all arithmetic operations. And if you want to test the bit shifting, then just test the bit shifting. You don't need to run the AES. You don't need to run the elliptic curve digital signature. There is no research, as far as I know, that shows that testing this will with greater probability discover the corruption of the module. It's just that the algorithms are there, that's why we do it, but there's no reason. They point to it, and that's good. And what they say, that with the greater trust they have in the implementation and the preservation of the integrity of the module by other means, why not just not self-test everything? Because 140-3, or the ISO standard, is an improvement from this point of view over FIPS 140-2, because it delays the invocation of the self-test, the known answer test, until the first use of the test. But then you still have to run it. And if at the beginning you have to run all of them, you have to self-test all of them. But the vendors are saying, and I think they have a point, that some can be avoided, some can be replaced with much simpler operations, like instead of doing elliptic curve cryptography, you can do something very, very simple and achieve the same level of assurance. So in addition to the integrity test optimization, the others, I hope, will be coming as well. And thank you very much. And I think it's time, maybe just a minute or two for questions.
Well, you say that this test is not to protect against attack, but just to protect against a failing chip. Have you then considered the possibility to have a self-test or integrated test on demand instead of being done systematically at overhaul, even if you do partial at overhaul? Then when you know you have bandwidth available, then you can run the self-test. I mean, the system can decide to run the self-test periodically.
A very good question. So first of all of this is optional, so you can still run all tests. And then, yes, running it on demand, or as they were proposed, running periodically, like every 10th wake up of the module, you run all of the tests. But on demand, it might be a good option too. I think it's a very good option, because anyway, the possibility of running all tests will be there. You can still run it. Whether I didn't think of it, of what you said, doing it on demand, but I think we can consider adding it. But the logic that will run all of them at the same time is there. We just thought about running them either only the first time the module is, you know, waking up after it's put in use, or every 10th, every 100th time of what. But maybe on demand is also good.
So sort of an extension of that, a lot of times customers will configure to only use a subset of, for instance, the algorithms, and there's some algorithms that would never be used. Would it be reasonable to only test the algorithms that are being configured rather than testing all?
Good question, too. The 5142, or rather an implementation guidance to the standard, addresses this issue already. The standard doesn't, but there is an implementation guidance 1.7. which defines different approved modes of operations. And that was exactly the problem. If you sometimes don't expect to run, use a particular algorithm, why self-test it? Now, that's not an integrity test, that's just an algorithm self-test. The integrity test, there are no exceptions based on this IG 1.7. But if you know that for a while, or in a particular mode, you don't run elliptic curve digital signature, then you define a mode with fewer algorithms and only run the self-test, the algorithm self-test for this mode, which includes the algorithms that are applicable to this mode. It's perfectly okay. It's in the implementation guidance. Then you switch to another approved mode. You rerun all of the algorithm self-tests again. So this optimization is available. It doesn't help with the integrity test, and it still requires everything for this mode. The proposal on this page is that even if your mode does require, let's say, all or most of the algorithms, don't self-test all of them. It's unnecessary.
All right. Thank you very much, Alan. He's available. Thank you. He's available now after during the break. Now we're going to have a coffee break, networking break until 3:45. Then we assemble again here. All right. Thank you.